Alice and Lydia, domesticity style meme. Big spoon, little spoon. Alice into the big spoon. Lydia likes to be held, and refuses to feel sorry about it on principle. And Allison likes the way Lydia feels tucked against her, safe and warm, and her hair bunched together and pulled over her shoulder so it won't get in Allison's eyes. Also, Lydia sleeps in these silky pajamas, and Allison's been sleeping naked since the day they moved into their own apartment. There's something obscurely comforting, and more than obscurely sexy, to be honest, about the feel of that silk against her stomach, her breasts, rising and falling with Lydia's breathing. Favorite non-sexual activity. To their mutual surprise, it turns out to be camping. Well, camping, anyway. Allison's dad has this cabin up in Washington State that he lets them borrow sometimes, and while Lydia is roundly disgusted by the weapons-stocked bunker that is in the basement, there's something kind of charming about vacationing somewhere where you have to boil the water before you drink it. Allison thought Lydia was faking her love of the cabin for the first three trips, playing nice because Allison had fond childhood memories of the place. On their fourth trip, wearing short shorts and a flannel shirt she'd bought for the occasion, no shoes and no makeup, Lydia put her hands on her hips and said, "Oh my God, Allison, seriously, you know I don't actually live and breathe Neiman Marcus, right?" And now they go whenever they've got the time. Allison hikes and hunts and swims, and Lydia reads, curled up on the back porch, warmth in her eyes when Allison leans down to kiss her hello. Who uses all the hot water in the morning? Lydia. She's not sorry, either. What do they order from takeout? They don't order takeout very much. Allison's parents, read Allison's mother, were very anti-takeout when she was growing up, and Lydia associates takeout with the end of home-cooked meals that was the first sign of her parents' impending divorce. Lydia's a great cook with the right recipe, and Allison's never picked up a cookbook in her life, but has a pretty solid intuitive grasp on what does and does not work together. When they do order takeout, it's usually some kind of dessert. Most trivial thing they fight over. Allison's adrenaline junkie streak, which makes Lydia nervous. Lydia's refusal to ever admit she's wrong, which makes Allison crazy. The name of the paint in the front hall of their apartment, which Lydia insists is eggshell, and Allison swears is cream, though neither of them can remember why they care. Who used the last of the shampoo? Who does most of the cleaning? Allison. This is because Allison makes most of the mess. Lydia is one of those deeply frustrating people who picks up after herself as she goes, and who doesn't understand why other people aren't capable of doing it. She doesn't mind if Allison's a little untidy. She just doesn't see why she should have to be responsible for picking up after her. Allison says it's not worth fighting over, which Lydia considers Allison's admission of her point. Who controls the Netflix queue? Lydia. Obsessively. Allison teases her about it endlessly, because she'll go in and reorder everything on any schedule Allison can follow. Lydia loftily informs her that no one understands her genius. At some point, it comes to light that Lydia and Styles are always racing to get to the conclusion of different shows with the intent of spoiling each other. After that, Allison stops asking on the theory that she doesn't want to know. Who calls the landlord/super when the heat isn't working? Allison. When she was a kid, her parents may or may not have run her through endless drills and simulations they called games, teaching her how to do everything from balancing a checkbook to reading a lease for exploitable points. As a result, Allison took to adulthood with a vengeance, and refuses to suffer any lag time in the repairs their apartment complex owes them under the terms and conditions of their lease agreement. Their super lives in a combination of great admiration for, and great fear of, her. Lydia's the good cop to her bad one, dropping the rent off personally and flirting with the staff, on the theory that it's never worth entirely antagonizing, and always worth having dirt on, the people who can make spare keys to your living environment. Who steals the blankets? Lydia. Or she used to, at least. These days, Allison tends to drape one of their throws across her shoulders early in the morning, dropping a kiss on the top of her head as she does it. 9 times out of 10, that extra blanket ends up in bed with them at night, pulled up to Lydia's waist and bunched between Allison's legs. It's mostly solved the problem. Who leaves their stuff lying around? Allison. Lydia, as mentioned, is a clean-as-she-goes type. She doesn't always mind Allison's habits, though. There's something very satisfying about bringing a client into her home and finding a loaded crossbow resting casually on the kitchen counter. Who remembers to buy the milk? Lydia. because Lydia does all of the grocery shopping, because when Allison goes to the grocery store, she inevitably returns with a hodgepodge combination of very intense healthy food types neither of them actually know how to cook, like quinoa and barley, and ridiculous things she clearly bought on impulse, soy ice cream and a whole coconut. Lydia finds this quirk amusing in a once-in-a-while kind of way, but by and large she likes to have the same stuff in the fridge every week, so the grocery store is now her domain. Allison, who may or may not have orchestrated this on purpose for reasons of finding grocery shopping boring, has no complaints. Who remembers anniversaries? Lydia and Allison don't do anniversaries. Lydia thinks that celebrating anniversaries and Valentine's Day is playing into a patriarchal construct that posits that love is only worth celebrating on a preassigned day, and Allison is one of those people who really doesn't understand the point of making a big deal about a random day every year. Instead, they surprise each other with gifts or dinner or weekends away at unannounced points during the year. It keeps them on their toes. Pant. God damn it. Now I want a Boyd Erica fig where Erica's entire phone is full of pictures like this. These little snapshots she takes when they're out and having fun. And at first it was just an excuse to lean against Boyd's shoulder, right? Smile for the camera, and then no reason to pull away after. But then, well, then one afternoon she's kind of down, waiting between classes on the next furious text from Derek to tell her whether or not she needs to be prepared to cut English for the third time this week, and she starts flipping through the pictures, right? And it's her and Boyd at a bowling alley, a bright pink ball clutched in her hand between them. It's her and Boyd at that all-night dinner on Vine Street after full moon, both of them with heavy circles under their eyes, but grinning wildly anyway. It's her and Boyd at the spring dance, her in that dress showing crazy cleavage, the one she never expected to pull off, and him down to his shirt and tie. It's her and Boyd naked and curled together in his bed one weekend when his parents were out of town, her smiling in his direction instead of looking at the camera, and him with his eyes closed, pressing a kiss to her cheek. And Erica feels her heart skip a beat when she looks at that one, not that she's planning to admit it to anyone. So maybe it's not so bad, she thinks, as she slips her phone into her pocket at the sound of the bell, if she ends up having to skip math instead of English today, if the rumors turn out to be true and there's really a rabid Pegasus behind the latest animal attacks. These photos will still be there when it's over, and Boyd will be too, the same way he always is. The same way he comes out of the classroom door she's leaning across from, grinning and reaching for her hand, murmuring,
"Thought it was my turn to walk you to class."
The end. Rob, anybody said, as somebody who's working their way through all your Teen Wolf fic, please write all the Boyd Lydia ever. Sarcastic, no bullshit having, intelligent love. And they could be Blidia, which is a terrible portmanteau, but it amuses me. Oh my god, I'm honestly, like, I'm pretty sure they're going to be that pairing that I write as a secondary pairing, even in six, have nothing to do with them, just have an excuse to write more of them because I love them so fucking much. Just the intelligence, and Boyd's ironclad practicality, and Lydia's 40% evil, and the fact that Lydia's never had the kind of boyfriend that made her go all gooey or however the show phrased it, because she's had Jackson and her relationship was mostly just her bossing him around, and Boyd would never be that. They'd be on this even plane, and that's something Lydia has never had in a relationship yet. And Boyd, who doesn't want to be alone, but who also clearly doesn't mean that in the I need a lot of people around me all the time way, because look at him, he's gorgeous. If simply being surrounded by people was something he wanted, he could have managed that without issue. God knows he's smart enough, both book-wise and people-wise, to work out high school popularity, but he was never inclined toward doing that, never really pushed into the why behind that I don't want to eat alone thought, because what Boyd really wants is someone who gets him. Because it's not really enough to not eat lunch alone, not when what he really wants is to eat lunch with someone whose company he finds enjoyable and worthwhile and entertaining and compelling and intellectually stimulating, and Lydia is so endlessly complex and he'd never be bored and just, God, I cannot hold all of these feels.
Warning for character death.
Ah, so in the long list of Teen Wolf stories I want to write is the Danny Stiles future fic, where Stiles' father moved out of Beacon Hills and took Stiles with him after werewolf near-death experience 1,538,473, and Danny stayed, got tangled up with pack stuff, San was involved in way more crazy shit than he ever signed up for, watched Jackson die, and ended up, like, going to college and graduating and buying this tiny house in this tiny town in, like, Ohio, forever going to drop characters in my state, what of it? And Roy gets paid exorbitant amounts of money to go tech shit he can do without actually having to, like, leave small town, low stress, no fucking supernatural shit ever the fuck again, Danny Mahalani. And he's got all these meddling neighbors who are, like, why don't you date this nice boy who is my nephew or whatever? And Danny's like, no thank you, I am perfectly happy with my controlled life where nobody ever turns out to be a secret lycanthrope hunter, lizard monster, banshee, vampire, mer person, or anything the fuck else. Cheers! And then Styles shows up. And mostly Danny is like, what the fuck are you doing here? But a little bit, he's also like, did you just trample my hydrangeas? And perhaps a very small part of him is additionally like, wow, you are hotter than you were in high school and wearing a cop outfit. And Styles is like, hello, I'm your friendly neighborhood officer of the law due to reasons of transfer from New York City because my life is apparently a Simon Pegg movie. Imagine my surprise when my boss is all, there is this very nice, very hot guy about your age named Danny who the entire town has been trying to set up with a nice boy since he fixed all of our computers. Are you a nice boy, Officer Stilinski? Danny, what the hell are you doing here? Oh my god! And Danny's like, please get your lack of order all up out of my very clean and orderly and non-supernaturally inclined lawn. Except then a few weeks later he has to call the police, because of reasons. Maybe there's a possum living in his attic and he calls animal control and Styles shows up instead, and then Styles pulls him over one day because he's speeding, because he has a huge shit meeting, and instead of giving me a ticket, Styles is like, would you like to ride along and we can vindictively ticket other people's cars instead? And then Styles' laptop breaks, and he has a complete freak out and begs Danny to fix it, and they keep running into each other at places, and Styles just starts talking like he does not have any concept of the fact that Danny has places to be. Or maybe like he knows Danny does not, in fact, have places to be. Danny can't tell. And slowly but surely, Styles seeps into Danny's life like a plague of personality and unwillingness to play by the rules and neurotic yelling about the lack of crime in this town. And the closer they get, the more Danny realizes that he's been avoiding living entirely for years and years out of this idea that if he stayed still enough, his past wouldn't catch him. And fuck that. And so he finds himself taking skydiving lessons and repainting his house by himself, while slightly drunk with Styles one time and generally behaving like someone who's not nearly so on top of his shit as Danny Mahalani has always been. And it is the best he has ever felt, ever. And they fall in love.
Derek and Erica go shopping. A Teen Wolf Not Sick by Jism. Read by Calicuria. I have this whole headcanon about how there's this manager at Macy's who's been working at that Macy's since she was a teenager in the 80s. And now she's in her mid-40s and just starting to go gray and rocking it, wearing these super fab outfits to work every day because, fuck you, she's had a Macy's discount for almost 3 decades and she hasn't gone up a size since 1999, and that was only because of Y2K panic, alright? And she's got 3 kids who are all either in high school or middle school, and her wife works for, like, I don't know, a travel agency or something, and they're comfortable, money-wise. Ends always meet, even if they only barely meet, but it's always kind of a scramble at the end of the month. And the kids always want something, and there's always someone yelling about who gets to use the car when, and she and her wife would just like to go on a goddamn vacation one of these days, but she still shows up flawless to work every day, and, like, okay, basically, her life is kind of insane, but she is a complete banff about it. But sometimes her job is hella frustrating, because, like, you know, the Beacon Hills Macy's seems pretty heavy on the likelihood of ridiculously wealthy suburban white people coming in and being assholes, and having worked in that particular brand of retail, that shit can be a serious fucking bummer. And so, back before the fire, she used to love the Hale family because they would come in and buy things and just, like, sass up the entire place. Like, when Laura was in high school, she'd sometimes breeze through the Macy's with Derek tagging along behind her, and she'd just point at people going, no, no, and seriously, lady, orange? And her mother was even worse, and everybody knew Peter back in the day, because there were people who actually thought Peter worked for Macy's, because when he got bored, he'd come in and give people an ask for fashion advice and butter up to the employees, including headcanon manager, with coffee and pastries so they wouldn't ban him. Which he didn't even need to do, because after a while they started getting people asking if he was a personal shopper and if they could hire him. And, basically, long story short, it makes me really happy to think of Derek revamping Erica's wardrobe in the Macy's with his sass out on full display, and this manager happening to catch a glimpse of them in the next aisle, and duck out of his eyeline and grin to herself, because, not that it wasn't a terrible tragedy in its own right and everything, not that she wasn't already sorry about the fire, of course she was, but, hell yes, there are Hales back in town.
Yeah. Snark Reactor asked, if Derek and Styles were puppies, what kind of puppy would they each be, and would there be cuddles? If Derek and Styles were puppies, Derek would be something with paws too big for his body, one of the big breeds that produces puppies that are constantly tripping over themselves because they've got these giant freaking paws and they don't know how they work, and Styles would be a terrier pup that thinks he's a lion. They would bark at each other all day, every day, but I suppose there could be cuddles if Derek thought they were secretly a cunning plan to keep his paw over Styles' muzzle, and Styles thought they were secretly a cunning plan to lure Derek into a false sense of security for long enough that Styles could steal his favorite rawhide. Holy shit. Oh, no, I want the Teen Wolf AU where Derek is King Arthur and Boyd is Lancelot, only playing in the, like, well, I pulled the sword out of the stone by accident, school of thought, as taught to me by that Disney movie I watched at a formative age. And, like, Derek comes to Camelot are, my family's dead, I'm just so angry that I could pull out the sword of the stone to work on my frustration. Shit, did it come out of that stone? Oh, shit, it came out of the stone. So Derek is, like, suddenly king, and the entire castle hates him, because seriously, can you imagine how irritating it would be to suffer a regime change over someone yanking a sword out of a stone by accident? I mean, come on. But Boyd Lancelot sees potential in him, and is like, well, I mean, I guess I could take you under my wing and stuff, since you clearly need some help, and also because no one else in this castle seems to recognize the merit of getting in with the king before he gets good at king. Seriously, I'm only a young knight, but by God, I'm going to be a powerful one. And then they have adventures, which mostly consist of Boyd being like, Derek, king better! And Derek being like, Boyd, teach me tonight. And Boyd being like, no, you're supposed to be king. And Derek being like, but I'd rather be knighting. And Boyd being like, well, I guess you learned your lesson about pulling strange swords out of stones, didn't you? And then a bunch of sweaty outdoor sex. Because, like, for real, why pass up the opportunity for sweaty outdoor sex? Like, can anyone come up with an argument against sweaty outdoor sex in their fiction? Because I, for one, cannot. And, like, obviously, Styles is Merlin and Scott is Gawain, because chivalry and loyalty and bravery match. And Lydia's Morgana and Allison's Guinevere. And come on, you guys, you know you want this, right? Someone do this, I'm already writing the thing! I am Beguilometer asks. Oh, but imagine Boyd would be so good for Derek. He just would not take crap. He would be like, you might be alpha now, but you're going to stop punching walls and tell us what's wrong right now. Oh, God, there is no question that Boyd would be good for Derek. Boyd would be so good for Derek. I'm just concerned that Derek would not bring anything to the table for Boyd. Although, like, no, I guess I don't really think that, because I think Boyd can look at Derek and appreciate the potential there. Because, yeah, he's more than a little unhinged, and yeah, he's pretty self-obsessed, and yeah, okay, fine, Boyd will admit that there's something awfully creepy about this older dude. He's all, allow me to bite you and turn you into a werewolf. I lived in an abandoned train station. My entire family was burned alive. At a group of high school students, but on the other hand, Derek's not actually terrible at being a werewolf. He's just not good at being in charge of things. And Boyd's definitely not objecting to his cheekbones or that scruffy beard he works sometimes or the leather jacket obsession of the tight jeans. At all. So that's how it starts, really. It's just Boyd's healthy appreciation for Derek's chiseled physique and a lot of time backing him up because somebody has to back him up, and Isaac's not focused enough, and Erica's got her own agenda. Not that Boyd blames her, but still. And Scott's really better suited to being an alpha himself, and Styles is human, and Boyd's always been the kind of guy who's able to see where he's needed. So he steps up, because this is his pack, goddammit, and if he wasn't expecting the connection to that to turn out to be so strong when he agreed to let Derek turn him, it's not like there's anything he can do about it now, is there? And so there are a lot of late nights, right? Stalking things out and skulking through the woods and occasionally beating the shit out of people slash creatures trying to kill them, and in between all of that, Boyd starts noticing Derek doing some of the things that Boyd never allows himself to do. Reaching out in that way that Boyd, of all people, can recognize as the result of this bone-deep loneliness. And it occurs to Boyd that he hasn't felt alone since he joined the pack. Not really. And that it's not the pack so much as it's Derek. These nights together keeping an eye on this tiny little world they're trying to build. And maybe it's just the realization that Derek wouldn't bother trying at all if he didn't care a lot. Or maybe it's just how much heat radiates off him when they're sitting next to each other like this. The edge of the rooftop, sharing a coffee that Derek keeps glaring at. So he says, this is nice, you and me. And Derek shifts and scowls and doesn't say shit, but his scent changes a little, and his arm brushes Boyd's, and Boyd may be new to this language he's adopted, this physical vernacular the wolf within him has been trying to teach him from the go, but he's starting to think he's worked most of it out. Teen Wolf Fix, I want so much I could cry! A Derek Styles human AU where Derek's a lumberjack. No, wait, hear me out! Because, okay, in this, like, version of reality, some terrible slash traumatic thing happened when Derek was a teenager. This universe is equivalent to the fire. Because I feel like Derek isn't really Derek without a terrible, dark past. But I can also acknowledge that, so, one time my family was burned alive, and I have never let go of the idea that it was my fault because the person who burned my whole family alive was my girlfriend, who was only dating slash sleeping with me for the sake of burning my whole family alive, is, maybe a little too dark for certain story arcs. But whatever, something happened, and Derek basically pulled a nope on his life, and, like, took off to become a lumberjack. And, like, okay, so that was when he was 15 or 16, now he's, like, 26 or 27, and he's been lumberjacking forever a decade, and his first couple years were really rough, what with him, like, lying about his age or working for companies that didn't care about his age or something, but now he's settled, and he's got a couple of close friends he works with. I'm thinking Boyd and Scott, both because, Boyd and Scott, And also because I love seeing well-developed Derek Scott friendship, because, the canon Big Brother, Little Brother vibes, and I thought it'd be so interesting to see a version of Derek Scott friendship where Scott doesn't have Styles. And also, I want to watch Scott, Styles fall in platonic love. Like, how adorable would it be to have adult Scott and adult Styles having those ridiculous geek-out moments they have sometimes when you meet someone, you're like, holy shit, dude, you just get me! Cute, you ain't never had a friend like me, and ignore me. But, like, other than Boyd and Scott, and Erica and Alice and their respective partners, who are, like, I think the local bartender and local law enforcement, maybe, Derek doesn't really have people in his life, because the whole point of being a lumberjack to begin with was that it was the first thing his teenage self could think of where he wouldn't have to talk to people, and he's not that kid anymore, not at all. He's older and wiser and healthier and has dealt with a lot of his shit. He laughs, he smiles, he's just pretty introverted, honestly. He likes his work, and he likes being out in the woods, and he likes his tiny house at the edge of a forest that's like 20 minutes from town, and he likes his life, to be honest. Boyd and Erica and Scott and Allison all kind of, like, worry about him and say things like, aren't you lonely, Derek? Or whatever. And Derek really, honestly, isn't. Yeah, there are moments where he's like, I sort of wish I could share this with someone. But by and large, when he looks at the pros and cons of introducing new things into his life, he tends to come to the conclusion that he's a little too happy with the way things are, how safe and constant and settled everything is now, to go inviting chaos. And so, naturally, then Styles comes to town, and he's, like, just out of college, and honestly, I don't even care what he does, so long as it puts him in the direct line of argument with Derek. Like, maybe he's a graduate student doing his thesis on some kind of plant that grows around where Derek is lumberjacking. Shut up, this is why I want this fic, but can't write this fic because I have no damn idea what lumberjacking really entails, other than, like, hitting trees with axes. If there are lumberjacks listening to this cringing in horror at how much I don't know, I apologize and swear I am aware that I know nothing. And he keeps showing up when Derek is trying to work. Like, maybe he's an environmental activist. Maybe he's the Lorax and speaks for the trees. I don't care. It'll just have to be something where Derek and Styles are thrown together a lot and find themselves on opposite sides of whatever issue, and just start fighting. And then, like, suddenly Derek is always fighting with Styles. Like, running into him at work, and fighting. Running into him at the grocery store, and fighting. Running into him at the library, and fighting. And then eventually they have some argument that, like, leads to a moment of emotional disclosure by accident, someone or both of them. Like, not a I have feelings for you moment of disclosure, so much as, like, a here we are yelling about stuff, and whoops, I just said something super personal, oh god, moment of disclosure, and it's really awkward. Neither of them wants to talk about it, or to each other, possibly ever again, because of how super awkward it is, and then they start, like, avoiding each other, right? Only they've been arguing for weeks and weeks and weeks now, like, it got to the point where they would run into each other places and just pick up arguments from where they left off. And now they're, like, ducking away from each other whenever they see each other, and Derek is surprised to find that he, like, misses it. Like, he keeps finding himself thinking of things to say to Styles and realizing he can't and being surprisingly bummed out about it. And he is very unsettled by that. So he goes to Boyd and is like, hey, dude, what does it mean when you're sad about not fighting with someone? And Boyd is like, it means you're having a feeling, Derek. Sometimes I really worry about the inside of your head. And then he goes to Scott and is like, hey, dude, what does it mean when you're sad about not fighting with someone? Don't say it means I'm having a feeling. And Scott is like, bro, that is so weird. My awesome new friend Styles, who is so awesome, we are hanging out all the time, but he totally asked me that same question the other day. Are you, like, psychic? And so then Derek and Styles run into each other again, and kind of make suspicious faces at each other, and Styles blurts out, Lydia says I should just ask you to dinner, and Scott says you're psychic, but really, I just really think you should know it's completely insane you think Holy Grail is better than Life of Brian. Like, look at you, you are a dyed-in-the-wool lumberjack. Doesn't that automatically mean you have to have the correct opinions about Monty Python? Please don't make me sing the song. And Derek can't help but smile, because he has totally missed this weird, lanky guy with messy hair and the surprisingly broad shoulders, and the smile that's as cutting as it is blinding. And Boyd was maybe wrong, wasn't he? Because Derek's not having a feeling, singular. Derek is having feelings, plural, and yeah, there's no question that this guy is inducing chaos to Derek's life incarnate. But maybe it's not so bad if it means he gets to stand on the street corner yelling about that goddamn lumberjack song for 20 minutes, only to be kissed, briefly, and by a very startled-looking Styles, and gets asked to dinner after all. P.S. I am for sure never, ever going to write this story. Like, I'm not even remotely equipped to write this story. That will never happen. So if literally anyone else alive would like to take this prompt and run with it, please do. I'd be eternally grateful. As would I. Thanks for listening. Boyd and Erica, Demististi style meme. By Jism. Read by Calicuria. Big spoon, little spoon. They don't sleep spooning, usually. Most of the time, Boyd sleeps on his back with Erica curled into his side. He likes the way her hair brushes against his chin, soothing for reasons he's not even sure how to explain, and she's never told him, but some nights she counts his breaths until she falls asleep. During the day, though, when they're up and around, the whole pack has gotten used to seeing Boyd standing behind Erica, an arm wrapped around her waist, her head leaning back in laughter on his shoulder. Does that count? Favorite non-sexual activity. Roller derby. Erica joined a team shortly after she got turned, because she used to dream about doing it back when her health issues were prohibitive. Boyd only meant to go to cheer her on, the first night. Now she's an underground phenomenon, and Boyd turns out to actually love the sport in its own right, while ref and announce when he's got time. They both have skates, and sometimes they'll go out in the middle of the night, when the whole town is quiet, and race each other up and down the empty streets. They got arrested, one time, for waking up an entire block with how hard they were laughing. Boyd had a word with Styles, who had a word with his father, and now they're always left alone. Who uses all the hot water in the morning? Erica, by necessity. That is a lot of hair. What they order from takeout. Erica likes spicy food of all varieties, and Boyd, having watched Eric take down a deer during a particularly gruesome moon, is now vegetarian 3 weeks out of every month. They eat a lot of Indian as a result of this. Erica gets tandoori chicken, Boyd gets malai kofta, and they split the palak paneer. Most trivial thing they fight over. They don't fight much, really. Boyd's life philosophy is of the pick-your-battles variety, because he can't see the point in wasting energy on pointless arguments. And Erica's really upfront about airing a grievance the second it comes up. Doesn't hold on to anger. Their families don't get along, and that's a point of contention between them sometimes. But that's less a trivial fight than an ongoing hurdle they're just going to have to keep jumping. They've been arguing, mostly in a joking way, about which one of them ate the last slice of Erica's birthday cake 6 months ago. Isaac hasn't quite been able to tell them that it was him. Who does most of the cleaning? Boyd. Clutter-wise, Erica's a mess, and Boyd, who grew up with three younger siblings and learned to value order as a result, cannot understand how she lives in concentrated chaos, is forever putting books back on shelves and finding cereal in between the couch cushions. On the other hand, their medical and financial shit is always in pristine order, because Erica knows better than anyone what a pain in the ass that shit can be if you don't have it on hand when you need it. Who controls the Netflix queue? Erica. Boyd is the, I don't care, just put something on, of the relationship. Which used to drive Erica crazy, but has turned out to be a good thing, because Erica will turn a movie or TV show off with great prejudice if it hasn't hooked her in the first 10 minutes. Every once in a while, Boyd will read about something or see a preview for something that he desperately wants to see, and Erica will bump it up to the front of the queue. Those are the only things she won't turn off if she doesn't like them. Also, they both have an unnatural fascination with the movie March of the Penguins, which the rest of the pack alternately mocks them for and considers proof that they're soulmates. Except for Scott, who occasionally asks if he can come over and watch it with them. Who calls up the super-slash-landlord when the heat's not working? Boyd. He's got a long fuse, and Erica's got an extremely short one. It only makes sense. Also, for some reason, it's only happened once. Boyd left calm and came back calm, but every problem they've had since has been taken care of almost before they noticed it. Sometimes workmen will just knock on their door out of nowhere, offering, "I was just in the building. Is there anything you need fixed?" Erica still doesn't know what Boyd did. Boyd insists that he did nothing. The super sends them Christmas cards. Who steals the blankets? Depends on the night. Sometimes Boyd wakes up to find that the blankets have been heaped on top of him. Sometimes Erica wakes up to find herself cocooned in their comforter, Boyd propped up on one arm and looking at her with the corner of his mouth twitching. A lot of nights they wake up exactly as they fell asleep, with the blankets as they left them. Sometimes Erica will get home later than Boyd, roller derby practice, what have you, and find him asleep on the couch. She'll go get the comforter out of their bedroom and curl up with him on those nights. Sometimes Boyd will come home later than Erica, the trials of being Derek's second command, and find her asleep on the couch. On those nights, Boyd usually carries her to bed. Who leaves their stuff around? As mentioned above, Erica. Boyd is, by and large, pretty tidy, although he did bring too many books to their apartment, and finds himself forced to stack the ones that won't fit in the bookcase against a wall. Eric likes to cite this as proof that he is secretly messy, but no one is buying it, not even her. Who remembers to buy the milk? Whoever's at the grocery store. Grocery shopping is one of those things they trade off doing depending on their schedules, because neither of them has big feelings about it one way or the other. Who remembers anniversaries? Boyd. Erica does too, but she has these moments of insecurity sometimes. Moments where she looks at him across the crowded room and thinks, really? He wants me? It makes her nervous about saying things about stuff like anniversaries, about doing anything that's going to make her look clingy. And Boyd said, I love you, first, even though Eric had been thinking it for months. She might be gorgeous and deadly and hell on wheels, but part of her is always going to be 15 and miserable, be waiting for the other shoe to drop. She always knows when it's their anniversary, but she never wants to point it out. Boyd has those moments, too, where he remembers being achingly, echoingly alone, where he sees her hair catch the sunlight out of the corner of his eye and thinks, when the hell is she going to come to her senses? It might be stupid, and it might be selfish, but he doesn't ever want to give her any reason to go looking for something else, to think anyone else could love her more. He plans a surprise for their anniversary every year, something heartfelt and brilliant and just for them, and every year she looks at him like he's everything she's ever wanted. The end. Amazon ZD says, no, seriously, where's the AU where some witches or warlocks or something turn Styles into a cat, and he lurks in wait in the abandoned train station, waiting for Derek to walk by so Styles can blitz attack his ankles? Boyd is probably the best at handling him. He just picks Styles up by the scruff of his neck and puts him where he wants him, and Styles is like, okay, Boyd, you win. You give the best ear scratches anyway. But let's be real, it's Scott who gives Styles the pancakes. God, obviously it's Scott who gives Styles the pancakes. Although, actually, if he wanted to really get real, Scott probably made those pancakes for his own damn self and left them alone to go find the syrup. Because, okay, he saw Styles positioning himself on top of the stairs in order to execute Operation Flying Tackle into Derek's face. He thought he had at least 3 minutes. But, obviously, Operation Flying Tackle into Derek's face was, in fact, a clever ruse. Because Styles already executed it to a satisfactory conclusion. To wit, Derek Hale shrieking and batting at his face and yelling, Ah, Styles, goddamn it! In what Styles is sure Derek will fondly imagine was a lower-pitched voice, before Scott woke up. This is, in fact, Operation Convince Scott to leave his pancakes alone for a few minutes, which is why Scott comes back to find that Styles has removed not only the top pancake, but the 2 pancakes beneath it, and dragged them over to the little bed they made for him in the corner out of laundry, to, like, hold down the fort or whatever until they figure out how the hell to change him back. And Scott spends several minutes making outrage noises at Styles, who licks his paws. He's not even eating the pancakes, Scott thinks. How is that fair? Until Boyd and Derek come in, and Boyd raises his eyebrows as Styles comes and winds himself between his legs, and Derek just crosses his arms over his chest and leans against the wall and is like, I know, Scott. I know. Oh my god. Scott and Allison, a domesticity-style meme. Big spoon, little spoon. That depends. Scott likes to sleep with his face in the curve of Allison's neck, because he likes the way she smells, likes to be able to rub his nose or his chin against the soft skin there, but he doesn't really care if he's doing it in a big spoon capacity or in a curled into her like a comma sort of way. There are nights Allison likes to be held, and nights Allison wants to be the one doing the holding. There are also nights they have ambitious sex and then just fall down on opposite sides of the bed, panting and sweating and too warm to sleep curled together, just their fingertips touching, and both of them smiling into their pillows. Favorite non-sexual activity? Singing along obnoxiously to ridiculous music. Like, there are all kinds of other crap they like doing. Ice skating is a perennial favorite, and Scott will forever be fond of bowling because it means he gets to think about Allison naked and claim victory over all those years when Styles would hiss, Are you sure you don't want bumpers, dude? It might actually be less embarrassing. At birthday parties. But there really isn't anything that beats a good old-fashioned rock out. Usually it happens in the car, and usually Scott's the one that starts it, and usually it only takes a couple of seconds before they're both screaming the lyrics at the top of their lungs. They've started doing it in front of their friends. Derek, in particular, is horrified. Who uses all the hot water in the morning? Scott. Allison does not understand, because he doesn't have that much hair to wash, and... Seriously, if you're masturbating in there, you could have at least woken me up. Move over. Scott isn't masturbating, though. He just likes the shower. It's peaceful and warm, and he doesn't understand why everyone doesn't take 25-minute showers to start their day. It's better than a hearty breakfast. Not that Scott skips his hearty breakfast or anything. What they order from takeout. Allison put a moratorium on takeout after the time she came home from a business trip to find a trash can full of empty boxes, Scott and Derek sitting outside the door of her bathroom looking hangdog and furious, respectively, and the sound of round three of Stiles' losing battle with food poisoning echoing through the halls. She and Scott agree that pizza doesn't count as takeout, and so far it's been a good decision, even if Scott does sometimes get a weird, misty expression on his face when someone says the word egg rolls. Most trivial thing they fight over. Whether or not Scott is telling Stiles things about their private life that should stay private. Scott insists that he isn't. Allison insists that she can tell that Stiles knows things. Scott insists it's not his fault Stiles can read minds. Allison insists that if Stiles could read minds, they'd know about it by now. Scott insists that he does know about it, and that's what he's telling her. Round and round and round they go. Whether or not Allison is telling Lydia things about their private life that should stay private. She is. Scott insists that's why she shouldn't be mad about Stiles. Allison insists that it's different. Scott insists that it isn't. Allison insists that it is. Allison insists that this is proof that Scott is telling Stiles things. Round and round and round they go. Whether or not Allison's father really needs to come over for dinner once a week. Who does most of the cleaning? They usually split up. Scott's the messier of the two of them, but only by a little. They've taken to just blocking out Saturday afternoons for going around the apartments and undoing the chaos left by the previous week. Almost always, this ends in Scott flicking water at Allison, or Allison throwing a pillow at Scott, and the two of them having sex on the floor. Who controls the Netflix queue? Allison, with occasional guest additions, or deletions, by Scott. She keeps adding dark psychological thrillers that he keeps removing because he knows they'll scare the crap out of him. He keeps adding dumb buddy comedies that she keeps pushing to the back of the queue because she's seen them already. Parks and Recs is their mutual happy place. Allison watches it for the plot, and Scott watches for Ron Swanson. Who calls the landlord slash super when the heat's not working? Scott, because Scott is friends with the super, and all of the rental agents, and every neighbor on every side of their apartment, and the mailman, and the guy who walks dogs in their block. Scott and Allison don't have a dog. Scott's just gotten to know the dog walker because he comes by so often. And most of the people they've met since moving in, honestly. Everybody likes Scott. Allison's quietly amused by it, though she does have every intention of dropping the book on the super in terms of getting things done should he and Scott ever fall out. Who steals the blankets? Neither one of them, really. If Scott's cold, and he rarely is, he tends to go for plan increase the amount of touching, as opposed to plan increase the amount of blankets, and Allison has found it to be a winning strategy. Once, when she was having a bad morning and didn't want to get out of bed, Scott pulled the blanket off and held it over his arms like wings or a cape or something, running around the room and making weird bird noises until she gave in and cracked up. But it's not like that's an everyday thing. Who leaves their stuff around? Again, both of them. Saturday afternoon cleaning is necessary because their apartment is a mess by Friday, and if they leave it for more than a week, it crosses the line into sty. Who remembers to buy the milk? Allison. Scott is a very, very good grocery shopper, but he seriously never manages to remember to get milk. It's like he has some kind of mental block, and it's become a running joke between them. Scott does the grocery shopping, but Allison buys milk at a convenience store on her way home. Every once in a while, Scott will remember, leaving them with an extra gallon of milk in the fridge. It almost always ends up going home with Stiles. Allison's not sure, but she thinks it's possible that Scott has engineered this, because it always seems to happen on those rare weekends when it looks like neither Stiles nor Derek could afford the laundromat. Who remembers anniversaries? Scott. Allison thinks he's ridiculous, but he does something sappy and heartfelt and over the top every year. He'll leave rose petals all over their apartment or serenade her from the street. One time he recreated their prom, which they had to leave the first time because a banshee broke into the school and started screaming. She rolled her eyes, but she couldn't stop smiling the whole night, especially when they both ended up singing along with the music. The end. Oh my god, do I have more Dylan and Posey or Scott and Stiles feels, though? Like, welcome to the show where the actors playing best friends are such best friends that they can break character and not be breaking character. Because, like, for real, how many times have Scott and Stiles hugged each other? Must Scott and Stiles have hugged each other over the course of their shared childhoods? Like, even outside of the scope of the show, how many times did little Scott, exuberant in his affection, tackle hug little Stiles in, like, the middle of a game of Monopoly, or that kiddie soccer team they both played on when they were 7 after Scott scored his first and only goal of the season? And, like, I know it's Dylan, but it's Stiles in my head, because look how fucking happy he is at seeing Scott be Scott! Because after all this awful shit and all these awful months and all these changes, Scott is still Scott. Still open and warm and dicking around like an asshole, promising no wolf powers and using them anyway, and turning it into a reason to make Stiles grin and catch him before they both fall down, to make him feel like he's still Stiles, even though sometimes he feels like he isn't. And at the end of the day, they're always for each other, and it doesn't matter if you're writing as a romantic pairing or as the brotherhood that's so clear between them or both, because that's always true. They're always for each other, Scott and Stiles, always on each other's side, because no one else knows either of them, could ever fully know either one of them, the way they know each other. And that will always be true, no matter how old they get, no matter how fucked up and ridiculous things are, and just, oh my god, my feelings, right? My god. So many feels.
AU. Stiles finally convinced Derek to have phone sex with him.
This, Derek says for the third time, is stupid.
You're gonna keep saying that. I'm going to keep touching my dick. I've really got it now.
Stiles sounds unsettlingly unperturbed.
Go on, complain some more about how this is a terrible plan. I think I could actually go for a spite orgasm.
Nobody's having a spite orgasm, Stiles.
Oh my god, you actually don't know me at all. Seriously, it is sad that you think that. Well, sad for you, anyway. I'm pretty much good.
Stiles' voice has gone from unsettlingly unperturbed to unsettlingly breathy, which is, while Derek's on the topic, unsettlingly familiar.
Go on, talk bitchy to me.
It would be so easy to just follow along and...
No, Derek reminds himself, shifting against the couch. This is not their house. This is not his territory. This is a room in a hotel in a whole different state, and he's absolutely not going to let his guard down and...
Oh, come on... Stiles says.
This is horrifying. I can actually hear you brooding over the phone. It's been 2 weeks, Derek, okay? If you're not going to have any fun, at least share some with the rest of the class.
You haven't masturbated in 2 weeks?
Derek cocks a disbelieving eyebrow at the ceiling.
That's incredibly hard to believe.
Of course I've masturbated. That's not what I'm talking about. Would you just stop being weird about the phone sex thing?
Stiles almost yells.
Seriously, stick your hand in your pants like a man, Derek. I know you want to.
Derek does want to, but...
And if you give me another speech about, like, your pack duties or whatever, I will remind you that you're basically at a werewolf business retreat. A werewolf business retreat that you were hiding from in your hotel room. I think they can spare you for a quick, mutual good time.
Maybe I'll just find it embarrassing, Derek mutters, in addition to unnecessarily risky.
Wait, which part do you find embarrassing?
Stiles sounds almost offended. Which, Derek thinks, is pretty rich.
Because I swear to God, man, if you've been waiting all this time to tell me you don't like my, I don't know, my sex noises or something, I will kill you. That is so not even fair.
No, Stiles, God, the phone sex thing.
Derek's nearly whispering, even though he's alone. Seriously, definitely embarrassing.
Not your sex noises. What the hell? Who even says things like that? I don't know how it would even work or anything.
There is silence on the other end of the line. Derek thinks it's awkward silence until Stiles says, "Hands in the pants, Derek." In a warm, laughing voice Derek hasn't heard in a while.
Oh, fine.
Derek catches the phone between his shoulder and his ear, reaching down to unbutton his jeans. He slides one hand down the worn elastic of his boxers, wrapping his fingers around his dick, which, yes, if he's going to be honest, has been hard since Stiles started trying to get him geared up for this 20 minutes ago.
Done. Are you happy now?
Not as happy as I'm about to be, Stiles says.
He sounds dangerously cheerful. But the voice that replaces it a second later is darker and lower and hotter, guiding Derek through an increasingly filthy list of demands. Which, it's still embarrassing. Of course it's embarrassing. There's absolutely nothing dignified or composed or even remotely alpha-like about this sort of behavior, and Derek is, obviously, appalled. It's just that it's sort of hard to remember that, isn't it? When Stiles is walking him through it this way, his breathing coming hotter and harder through the phone as he talks. Derek can almost see him, spread out in their bed and grinning up at the ceiling with his dick in his hands, pulling at himself lazily as he says, "Come on, Derek, one more finger. Do it for me." He's always gotten off on this kind of thing. Says it's because it's the only time Derek ever listens to him. Just now, Derek can't quite bring himself to complain. "Dude, you don't have all day here. Come already." Stiles chokes out after 20 minutes. It's ragged and riding the hard edge, like he's waiting on Derek and less than pleased about it. And Derek feels the built-up need in him coil and release, staining the inside of his boxers. He must make a sound, must choke on it a little, because he hears Stiles unravel on the other end of the line. For a while, Derek just keeps his eyes closed and listens to that, the staccato rush of his breathing and the way it steadies back out.
"You might have a point," Derek says eventually. "About phone sex. Might."
"So it's the kind of thing that merits further study, then?" Stiles says. Derek can hear the smile. "How's 4 o'clock? That work for you?"
"Stiles, it's 3:30.
4:15? Stiles suggests brightly. "If pressed, I could even be convinced to push it to 4:45, but I really think that's not in the best interest of science." Derek hangs up. He'll call back at 5. Stiles, Derek, Domesticity Meme. By Jism. Read by Calicuria. Big spoon, little spoon. It depends on what they're doing. If they're watching a movie, or, hacked security footage of the Minotaur attack that went down at Macy's last night, either way, on the couch, Derek's the big spoon, because Stiles moves around too much to function in that capacity. He still elbows Derek in the stomach sometimes while he reaches for the remote slash popcorn slash laptop slash beer, but Derek's a werewolf. He'll heal. In bed, Stiles is almost always the big spoon, at his own insistence. Neither one of them will admit it, but they both know it's to save Derek the embarrassment of having to renegotiate their positions after a bad dream. What is their favorite non-sexual activity? Well, it's definitely not vanquishing evil, but since that's pretty much all they ever have time to do, it's hard to know. They can't go out to movies together, because Derek hates movie theaters. Big dark rooms with no vantage points and few exits crowded full of humans and the cloying sweet smell of soda and candy. No. And they can't do theater, because neither one of them really sees the point. They've tried to go out to fancy dinners, but inevitably they end up arguing, because it feels weird to sit across from each other with a white tablecloth between them while there's a rogue gorgon somewhere in Beacon Hills. They hike, sometimes. They like baseball. Every once in a while they go on a road trip, just the two of them, and take turns driving. Who uses all the hot water in the morning? Derek. Except on those weeks when Stiles gets up early and uses all the hot water just to fuck with Derek, which then results in Derek getting up even earlier and using up all the hot water just to fuck with Stiles. One time they ran into each other in the hallway at 2 a.m. because of this game. Derek choked on his breath, Stiles laughed till he cried, and they slept until 10 the next morning. What they order from takeout? What don't they order from takeout? Stiles can make mac and cheese, mac without cheese, and frozen dinners. Derek can't cook anything, with or without a little werewolf oven. They make a lot of pizza. What is the most trivial thing they fight over? Everything! The hot water thing, the movie theater thing, the way Stiles pronounces the word establishment, the way Derek pronounces the word pronounces, Derek's leather jacket obsession, the fact that Stiles is never willing to be wearing less than 3 shirts at any given moment, how often a werewolf can have sex in a day before he dies, the various inaccuracies in Stiles' MMORPG, which Derek has taken to watching him play for mockery purposes. Whose hair is in the drain? I think you mean whose fur is in the drain, Derek? The color orange, the name Miguel. Seriously, it'll be easier to ask the most trivial thing they don't fight over.
which is, for the record, the fact that both of their feelings about their respective cars are totally sane, and anyone who disagrees can suck it. Who does most of the cleaning? Derek. It's a stress response. When his life is chaotic, read, always, cleaning helps him feel like he's got some order somewhere. Styles does the laundry, which is just as well, because Derek never does manage to deal with the bloodstains properly when he doesn't. Who controls the Netflix queue? Styles. Derek has terrible taste in television and movies, which is largely because, outside of horror movies, which he consumes with a passion for the sake of feeling superior when they're wrong, he hasn't seen very much. Styles is currently working him through Arrested Development. Derek likes it more than he's willing to let on. Who calls the landlord slash super when the heat's not working? Styles. Derek, A, doesn't actually care that the heat's not working, just that Styles cares and is cold, and B, isn't actually all that good at arguing with people who don't respond to glares. Styles, on the other hand, has a very love-hate relationship with their landlord. Sometimes Derek can hear them screaming from 10 floors up, and sometimes Styles comes back from her office with cookies. He's stopped trying to understand that. Who steals the blankets? Styles. Derek runs hotter than he does by default. And also, not that he'll admit it, Styles has shit circulation and gets cold constantly and always. He dresses in layers to try to conceal this fact, but Derek, having spent many a night in bed next to his fucking icicle hands and feet, is totally wise to it. He's got no problem with the fact that Styles steals the blankets at night, and, in fact, finds the typically resulting Styles blanket burrito more adorable than I'll ever admit to anyone. But it drives him crazy that Styles will never admit to being cold. This is why everyone in the pack has, at some point or another, borne witness to an argument that ended with Derek whipping his jacket at Styles' head and storming away. And then, once he's gone, with Styles putting the jacket on. Who leaves their stuff around? They both do. They're busy. They're battling evil. Derek will end up cleaning it up next time he freaks out anyway. They try to be careful about putting the top-secret supernatural crap somewhere discreet, though. Better safe than sorry. Who remembers to buy the milk? Styles. Derek finds the grocery store abhorrent in concept and practice, and Styles has given up on trying to make him more normal. Every once in a while, he'll make Derek go with him anyway, for the, you know, cereal and milk and frozen dinners and mac and cheese, and, meat that Derek almost always grills that is their standard grocery purchase. And Derek always spends the entire time muttering darkly about wasted produce and ridiculous human excess. It's really not worth the trouble. Who remembers anniversaries? Derek, invariably, and every single year. Styles knows it's stupid, but it still kind of gets him where he lives, the way Derek never forgets. It's not that he ever really makes a thing about it. They're not really the type to make a thing about it, either of them. And anyway, there's always something more important going on or threatening to level the town. But Derek will grab Styles' hand in the car, or press his face into Styles' neck when they go to bath, or wrap an arm around Styles' waist while they're waiting for the phoenix to rise from the ashes and tell them what the hell is going on. Thanks, he says, every year, like he thinks he has to, like he thinks that even makes sense. He always smiles, though, when Styles says, idiot, and then, gruff and quiet, you too. So maybe it's not such a bad tradition, as traditions go. The end.
Scott Styles feels ahoy! A Teen Wolf's Not Sick, by Jism, read by Calicuria. Consistently Unsure asked, tell me all about your Scott Styles feels, please?
Well, I mean, if you're going to twist my arm.
So, I think they've been touching forever, right? Curling up together watching movies, and Styles' head in Scott's lap during marathon gaming sessions, Scott crawling into Styles' bed during sleepovers, and Styles flexing his hands at his sides when he's stressed like he wants to reach out and can't, won't, doesn't know how until Scott catches the motion and hugs him. I think they've always been that way, and I don't think there's ever been anything romantic about it, because it started when they were too young to even see romance as a possibility, and then they were teenagers, but they were still just them, you know, Scott and Styles, and neither one of them ever thought about it. And then Scott starts dating Allison, and it's not that Styles is jealous, exactly. It's not that he's jealous, because Scott is happy, and that's awesome, and Allison is awesome, and that's awesome, and nothing has changed, not really.
Scott still leaves you with affection, wrapping an arm around Styles' shoulder during lunch or tackle-hugging him during a practice lacrosse session. And Styles always knew this would happen, that they'd find people, other people, and things would get different, get sexy, get into stuff they couldn't share. But he's not really kidding when he tells Sky his newfound heroism is attractive to him. And he's not kidding at all when he asks if Scott wants to try making out a little. Because it's not that he's jealous of Allison about anything except the kissing thing, because now that he sees Scott kissing someone, he can't help but wonder what it would be like to kiss Scott himself. To press his mouth against lips that would probably break apart in a laugh halfway through and be rendered unkissable. To hear Scott's breath catch the way it does when Styles finds himself reduced to tickling Scott into submission for the sake of stealing the remote from him. He can't help but wonder about it a lot. In fact, it might be accurate to say that Styles is wondering about that all of the time, staring at the back of Scott's neck in chemistry and then breaking his pencil in half when he's called on, walking a few steps behind him in the hall and feeling simultaneously good dirty and horrible person dirty about the way he's surreptitiously checking out his best bro's ass. And then Allison and Scott break up junior year, and it's the seventh or eighth time, and Styles doesn't even think about it, because Scott is not something he's going to get to have that way, and he knows that, because Scott is his best friend and his brother, and Styles shouldn't want more from him, and the fact that he does want more anyway is Styles' problem, not Scott's. And he's not going to let it ruin their friendship, and it's not like he's out of practice with wrestling down hopeless want into something small and manageable and, mostly, private. So when Scott shows up, Styles is expecting to hang out, maybe try to get him drunk, talk him through the breakup blues for the umpteenth time while somehow managing to bite back. Anybody who would let you go is seriously missing out on the years and years and years of proof I have that you are the best person alive and the best friend I've ever had, and I love you and I've loved you the whole time. It's not my fault I didn't know. Except when he opens the door, Scott is standing with his hands in his pockets, and this really strange look on his face, and he says, Styles, I think I kind of have to, like, tell you something. And Styles just knows, because he's always known Scott, because there's nothing else that sheepish, hangdog, apprehensive, hopeful expression could mean when combined with the way Scott's scuffing his shoe against the welcome mat like he did that time when they were 8 and he saved for 6 months to get Styles a hamster for his birthday and it escaped, and he's laughing and grabbing Scott by the front of his shirt and hauling him in, and then Scott is grinning against his mouth just like Styles always imagined he would be, wide and unkissable and so close, and saying, "Dude, you could have told me." And Styles kisses him anyway, the corner of his mouth, the top of his chin, until Scott stops smiling and kisses back, tumbling them both inside.